What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is A.O. Oppenheimer, the creator of a new and controversial website, Jewrotica. We'll also have visits from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. February is a quiet month in many ways. For one thing, it's short. For another, after the Super Bowl today, there is no football to worry about the whole month. And since there are actually no Jewish players or owners, or as far as I can tell, coaches in this Super Bowl, although it is true that Art Modell used to own the Baltimore Ravens, and he certainly was Jewish, our fellow Jews in Cleveland will probably deny that, it's probably time to move past football to the coming holiday of Purim, still 3 weeks away, but well worth starting to enjoy. But before we do that, one final football note on this Super Bowl Sunday. After a long hiatus, there now will be another Jewish NFL head coach. That's right, Mark Trestman of the Chicago Bears is Jewish. Trestman becomes just the fourth Jewish head coach in NFL history, preceded by Ali Sherman of the New York Giants, Sid Gilman of the San Diego Chargers, and Marv Levy of the Buffalo Bills. Gilman and Levy are in the Hall of Fame, by the way. Mazel tov to Trestman, and of course, good luck. He does have one Jewish player, the Bears' first-round pick last year, Gabe Karimi, a star lineman in college. So far as I can tell, this might be the first time in NFL history that a Jewish player will be coached in the NFL by a Jewish head coach. Well, my friends, I've been contemplating the question of comedy as we prepare for the wildly comic holiday of Purim. You may have noticed that there's a certain bias in religious circles against the humorous, a sense that spirituality is at odds with that which is funny. In fact, there are entire religious sects devoted to avoiding humor, and lack of laughter is one of the elements one is supposed to find in a sober clergyman. Religion is apparently, you know, kind of supposed to be boring in order to be authentic. Well, our Jewish tradition leans a little bit this way, too, sometimes. The Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, includes an injunction in the very first verse of the Book of Psalms that says, "Happy is the person who does not dwell among those who joke." There are lots of comments throughout Jewish tradition directing us to be more serious, to avoid discovering firsthand that, as Ecclesiastes says, laughter is mad and accomplishes absolutely nothing. Some even go further. One of the more entertainment-savvy figures in the ultra-Orthodox Jewish world, a guy named Rabbi Nosson Zev Grossman, has been quoted as saying, "Entertainment in all its diverse fashions is radically opposed to the Torah way of life and to genuine Jewish feeling. Even if there is no explicit prohibition against it, entertainment's essence is the antithesis of Jewry and Torah. The world of entertainment is truly the foremost enemy of Judaism." That might explain why Orthodoxy is so much fun. But it might also explain why there's a certain resistance among Jews to actually having a good time. I mean, aren't we supposed to suffer? Well, as Purim approaches, I would proudly maintain that comedy is as essential to human spiritual life as prayer. Poet Dan Pagis says in his poem Biped, "Only human beings among all the other animals laughs." We need to laugh, and comedy and its various humorous sub-themes helps us do just that. There's even a great deal of evidence in the Bible that humor is an essential part of the human equation. Indeed, God appreciates a good joke. One of our great patriarchs' names is Yitzchak, Isaac, which means he will laugh. And the mitzvah on Purim is to have simcha v'sason v'ikar, loosely read, joy and laughter and celebration. Admittedly, a lot of Jewish humor is gallows humor, somehow appropriate to the story of the Book of Esther. You know the routine. All the Jewish holidays from Hanukkah to Pesach can be summed up in 9 words. They tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat. Never more true than on Purim. So it's incorrect, even un-Jewish, to insist that Judaism shouldn't be funny. It would be positively anti-historical to say that a people that has produced comedians from Sholem Aleichem to the Marx Brothers to Jack Benny to Milton Berle to Mel Brooks to Jackie Mason to Robert Klein to Richard Lewis to Billy Crystal to Jerry Seinfeld to Jon Stewart, not to mention the Three Stooges, George Burns, Sid Caesar, Jerry Lewis, Neil Simon, Carl Reiner, Lenny Bruce, Buddy Hackett, Alan King, Tom Lehrer, Woody Allen, David Steinberg, Gilda Radner, Fran Drescher, Adam Sandler, and many, many more comedians of all types and models didn't believe in the inherently comic possibilities of life. And so to everyone who thinks being funny isn't Jewish, allow me to award a prune hummentoshen to you and invite you to listen to the former Two Jewish guest Joel Chasnoff singing his The Purim song.
Every year at Purim time, while I'm eating my hummentoshen, I remember all our enemies who tried to kill us, and I think, oh my gosh, and Haman wasn't the first one. He certainly wasn't the last who tried to turn the Jewish people into a thing of the past. Now what Haman and those other guys have in common is that their master plans were unfurled, 'cause they believed that the Jewish people were taking over the world. So now I urge you, Haman, please listen to my song, and you'll see that your fears of the Jews taking over are absolutely wrong. 'Cause if the Jews ran the world, everybody would know everybody else. There could be no more witness protection program or anonymous letters to the editor. All around the world, people would meet each other and say, "Ah, you from Beijing? My brother go to Hebrew school with your first cousin. Do you know a boy named Mei Ling?" And if the Jews ran the world, nobody would think that Jesus was God's son. They'd just think he was some ordinary Jewish guy who happened to look like the guy in The Joy of Sex. The Pope would be a rabbi. There'd be a synagogue on every block, and every newborn boy when he's 8 days old would have the tip cut off of his. No. So Haman and Antiochus and Nebuchadnezzar, you're all barking up the wrong tree. Stop taking out your personal problemos on nice Jewish boys like me. We don't run the world, but even if we did, you could tell by this one omen. Instead of searching for Easter eggs on the White House lawn in April, little kids would be looking for the Afikomen. Take that, Haman.
That fun holiday of Purim simply can't get here quickly enough. When you get right down to it, we can always use some fun. That was The Purim Song from Joel Chasnoff for the holiday of Purim coming up February 23rd and 24th. But some of us are having shows and carnivals like our Le Megillab celebration at Temple Emmanuel on Sunday, February 17th. When we come back on Two Jewish, A.O. Oppenheimer, the creator of the brand new and pretty wild website called sensuallyjewrotica.org, will explain what prompted that effort and whether you should visit it. I think you should. Find out in a few moments on Two Jewish.
There's nothing like a live radio show to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Two Jewish Radio Show, featuring Rabbi Sam Cohan and friends. It's live at the Fox Theater on March 2nd.
Better than Prairie Home Companion, it's Deli Home Companion. Join me and my great guests, including Richard Lewis, for a live radio variety show to benefit Jewish Family and Children's Services, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and Temple Emmanuel, Saturday night, March 2nd at the Fox.
Tickets at the box office and FoxTucsonTheater.org, or learn about sponsorship opportunities by calling 327-4501.
Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome our guest this morning, A.O. Oppenheimer. She's the founder of the fascinating new Jewish website, Jewrotica, which has a great combination of Judaism and eroticism. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rabbi Kohan. Thank you for having me on the show.
All right. So what kind of a job is this for a nice Jewish girl?
Oh, what a question. You know, it's not a job that I thought I would be having, but I've been working on Jewrotica.org for the past 7 months, and it's been a riot. It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, one of my motivations behind it, with any project that I do, I think, wow, I wish that X, Y, and Z existed, but it doesn't. Okay, let me, you know, try my hand at creating it. And I thought that there was a gap, a major gap, for when it came to a Jewish conversation about sexuality, bringing a sex-positive outlook to Judaism. And Jewrotica, I would say it goes both ways. It's about bringing the sexuality and the sex-positive conversation and education to the Jewish community, but it's also about bringing Judaism back into the sex and into the bedroom, and being able to take Jewish values and Jewish heritage and stories and have relevance in our lives.
You know, it's fascinating. The Talmud isn't shy or squeamish about sex. Unlike many religious traditions, Judaism never really shied away from sex. We've never thought about sex as a bad thing. So in a way, I guess I see your website as, I wouldn't say necessarily specifically forwarding Jewish values, but it's been a kind of a Jewish approach to sexuality for, 3,000 years?
Certainly. And there's stories of sexuality in the Torah, as you said, and in the Talmud. And it's only since living in this kind of sex-negative Christian diaspora that I think we've absorbed negative messages about sexuality. And having sex be private is a perfectly fine thing, but it's when privacy and the concept of tzniut, of modesty, get taken to an extreme to where there's no sex education, there's no discourse, there's no conversation around it, that is what leads to ignorance and embarrassment and shame, and that's what we're trying to combat. And I don't know if you've had a chance to check out our offerings on Jewrotica.org, but it's not just erotica and raunchy stories. We have reflective essays, we have educational pieces, we even have a weekly column, a commentary on the Parsha, the Torah portion, called Double Mitzvah. So you can come to Jewrotica looking for sex and find Torah, and you can come for Torah and maybe have your worldview expanded of things you never knew existed.
All right, we're going to talk about Double Mitzvah and many other subjects when we come back with A.O. Oppenheimer here on Too Jewish. She is the creator of the website Jewrotica.org, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments on Too Jewish. Among my most pleasant, at least time-consuming duties, I have the honor of serving as president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, which celebrates the memories of Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan, my own grandparents. Once a year, the foundation gives a substantial cash award to an individual for outstanding service to Klal Yisrael, the totality of the Jewish people. This service can involve any one of four different fields: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. If you know of anyone who might qualify for the 2013 Kohan Award, just visit our website, www.kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N, and you'll find the nomination form to submit. And while you're there, you can also learn just who my own grandparents were and who participates in honoring their memory today. That's kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N-A-W-A-R-D. It's a good visit.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime by directing your tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. State of Arizona allows taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations who provide scholarships for kids in kindergarten through 12th grade to go to qualified private schools. JETCO provides a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, the Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel's Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Join over 750 supporters last year who gave money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income tax. New this year, there's an additional tax credit, the switcher credit. It increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,003 for single filers and $2,006 for married couples filing jointly. When we fight every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to foster a Jewish identity for our community's kids. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive financial aid in order to get a Jewish education. Call 647-8442, again, 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Give the gift of education. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website by streaming them or download them from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. You can see and hear Rabbi Arthur Green, last week's Two Jewish guest and one of the most important scholars and teachers of Jewish mysticism, at the Rabbi Albert T. Bilgrey Lectureship at the University of Arizona and at Temple Emmanuel this coming Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, February 7th, 8th, and 9th. His overall topic is Kabbalah, Hasidism, and Spirituality at the U of A this Thursday night at 7 o'clock at Hillel, and at Temple Emmanuel, 7:30 p.m. Friday night and noon on Saturday. Call 327-4501. That's 520-327-4501 for more information, or visit templeemmanueltucson.org. All events of the Bilgrey Lectureship are free and open to the public. And don't forget to get your tickets soon for the 10th anniversary celebration of the Two Jewish Radio Show, which is coming up March 2nd at 7:45 p.m. with a live broadcast from the Fox Theater. Go to Fox Theater Tucson, theatre.org, or call 520-327-4501. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gilbert, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
Well, there's an awful lot people can learn about Israel, and we have a new program through the Israel Center and through Temple Emmanuel for people to do so.
We do have an educational series, Israel Past and Present, that will start to take place at Temple Emmanuel on February 4th, Monday. Of course, the address of Temple Emmanuel, for those who don't know, is 225 North Country Club. The point of the series is that, you know, a lot of people talk about Israel. They argue, they debate, they see things on the news. But they don't really know much. They don't know, for example, where did the Jewish people come from? What was the Israelite period in the ancient Israel? What are the elements of Israeli culture in the past and in the present. What is Zionism? Is Zionism a bad word? Where did Zionism come from? How did it start? Is there only one flavor of Zionism, or are there many? What are seculars in Israel? Are they like seculars here? Are they different? What is the prayer of the secular? How does Judaism affect current pop music in Israel, for example? And of course, you can't avoid the political aspect when talking about Israel. So one of the speakers, for example, that will be in this talk is Ronnie Kedar, a resident of the border of Gaza Strip that works to build bridges for peace with Palestinians, despite the fact that her village, her town, is being shot constantly by rockets from the Gaza Strip. Some other speakers that will take place in this amazing series: Ken Miller from the University of Arizona, an archaeologist and a specialist on Israel; Dr., or should I say Professor, Ed Wright from the department, the head of the Department of Judaic Studies at the University of Arizona; Professor David Graysborg. I will have the honor of giving one talk, and Ronnie Kedar, as I said. And, you know, this is the opportunity also to thank you, Rabbi, for hosting this series and taking the initiative of doing this amazing series. I think I can't emphasize enough how important it is for us as Jewish people to learn about Israel, to get to know more, and to get engaged with Israel.
And I should add, it's not only for Jews. Anybody who has any interest in Israel, and of course, you know, if you're interested in the Holy Land, if you're interested in the Middle East, this is a great program to learn more. And I would encourage everybody to learn more, not just about the political issues, Israeli-Palestinian issues, but really about the country, which is so rich, so complex, and so beautiful.
See you there, February 4th, 7 p.m.
Thanks, Guy. If you want to register, you can call 327-4501 at Temple Emmanuel.
And it's 6:30 p.m. Sorry, not 7. My bad.
Even the Israelis should try to be there at 6.
Yes. If you work with Israeli time, come at 6. Come at 5:30. You know what? Come at 5:30.
Thanks, Guy. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So, Egypt, first of all, everybody thought the Arab Spring, well, a lot of people thought, was going to lead to democracy in the Arab world. It's leading to something, but if this is democracy, Israel might want to go back to the way it was with dictators all around. Let's talk a little bit about what has evolved out of all of that.
Well, you know, Israel is and always has been in a very tough neighborhood. For most countries that try to chart a course through rough seas of foreign policy and economic policy and all that, a predictable, stable regime, however evil and undemocratic, is actually easier to deal with. It's more convenient, which explains historically why the U.S. has often supported regimes which don't exactly reflect our national values of democracy and respect for human rights and the rule of law. I mean, we've chronically made mistakes for the sake of convenience and predictability. But when the Arab Spring first began and things kind of loosened up and there was a breaking up of the ice flows on the river, if you will, in much of the Arab world, people were worried about the unpredictability and couldn't it lead to extremist regimes, couldn't it lead to disorder? And the answer is yes, yes, and yes. I think, you know, Israel is now faced with a situation where the chronic civil disorder in Lebanon has subsided a little bit, but there is effectively a civil war and millions of refugees pouring out of Syria, so that's a hugely unstable place. Egypt now seems to be imposing martial law and declaring states of emergency all over the place, and the president's invoking extraordinary powers, and this cannot make Israeli policymakers happy because it prolongs uncertainty about the direction, if any, in which Egypt will finally go. I mean, it's basically the situation has evolved to the point where who would ever have imagined the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan is looking like a model of stability. And, you know, 5 years ago, nobody would ever have imagined that to be the case. So, yes, I mean, I think change is always risky. Change is necessary and long overdue in the Arab world, a greater voice for the people, the faltering steps towards democracy, all to the good, I think, but it's going to be a rough road, and it's particularly rough for Israel because it sits on several fault zones, really, and we're seeing some of the dangers and the risks and the unpredictability involved in any move towards democracy.
You know, we forget sometimes in America that democracy was not that easy for us initially, and a lot of people thought we should have a king. So it should be no surprise that in a region in which only Israel really has an educated population that's also been educated about democracy, that that's the only place democracy really seems to work so far.
Well, unless we broaden our focus slightly and include Turkey, because Turkey is really a functioning multi-party democracy, and it's a good example. It's not an Arab country, but it's certainly in the region.
Yes, it is. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Jaime loves his dog Cindy very much, but one night his wife says to him, "Jaime, I've been meaning to tell you something for some time." "So tell me already," says Jaime. "I think you spend too much time talking to that dog, Cindy. She can't possibly understand you. She certainly doesn't understand the Yiddish you use." "Ah, but she can," says Jaime. "She's a Jewish dog." His wife laughs out loud. "Don't be ridiculous. Of course Cindy's not Jewish. Dogs can't be Jewish." So the next day, Jaime takes Cindy with him to see his rabbi. "So Jaime," says Rabbi Gold, "how are you doing these days? How can I help you?" "I'm fine, Rabbi, thank you, but I'm a little bothered about something," says Jaime. "I'm here to ask whether my dog Cindy could be a Jewish dog. After all, my wife's Jewish, my sons are Jewish, my daughter is Jewish. How can I tell if Cindy is Jewish?" "Well, that's a good question, Jaime," says Rabbi Gold, stroking his beard. "I'm going to ask my assistant, Rabbi Katz, to join us. He might be able to help." But as soon as Rabbi Katz comes into the rabbi's office, the dog Cindy goes wild and chases Rabbi Katz, barking. "Well, Jaime," says Rabbi Gold, "that's proof for me. Cindy is indeed a Jewish dog." "But how did you come to that conclusion?" asks Jaime. "Because," says Rabbi Gold, "she just chased Katz." You see, that was kind of a Shaggy Dog story, or Jewish Shaggy, oh, never mind. In any case, that was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion of Mishpatim includes as many laws as nearly any other part of the whole Torah. After the last few weeks of spectacularly dramatic portions featuring some of the highlights of the whole of Jewish tradition, indeed of all religious history, Mishpatim sort of comes as a major letdown. Last week, amid the smoke and thunder of Mount Sinai, we received the Ten Commandments. The week before, God parted the sea for us, and we miraculously crossed on dry land. And in the weeks before that, 10 plagues struck the Egyptians, and Pharaoh and Moses had a duel of wills in the desert. But Mishpatim is nothing more than a collection of laws about how to interact with other human beings, what we would call today civil legislation. How exciting. How to handle somebody else's property fairly, how to assess punitive damages when a man injures another person or destroys somebody's property. How to act when someone puts his or her stuff in trust with you. Laws of manslaughter, theft, damages. If the Torah is truly our fundamental moral text, this is an array of detailed legislation about human interaction that seems so trivial as not to belong in the Torah at all. So, why is Mishpatim here? In truth, we human beings do not love the law or lawyers. But without laws and without enforcement of laws, we wouldn't function well at all. In fact, the Mishnah tells us we would tear each other apart. And where anarchy reigns, justice is absent. And that's where Mishpatim comes in. For we need law, and we need limits, although we might not like either one very much. Judaism understands that if we are to be truly good or truly free, we must observe the laws and rules of human decency embodied in the code of legislation that makes up Mishpatim. Before we can love another human being as we love ourselves, we must respect that human being's property and person. Interestingly, at the end of this week's Parsha, after all of the rules and laws, these torts and talionises, God reveals a glimpse of the divine essence to Moses, a personal revelation. It's a change of pace for such a legally focused text. But there is a lesson here. In this way, Mishpatim teaches us that we can only experience real holiness when we begin by respecting our fellow men and women, when we come to understand that we are all in this together, and that the way to God is actually through the ways we learn to work together and to trust one another. And we have to do this in simple, practical, daily ways by following decent rules for human interaction. Poet Adrian Rich put it well. These atoms filmed by ordinary dust, that common life. Freedom. It isn't once to walk out under the Milky Way, feeling the rivers of light, the fields of dark. Freedom is daily, prose bound, routine remembering. Putting together inch by inch the starry worlds. Freedom and holiness are dependent on the little laws established here in Mishpatim. We can achieve both when we learn and follow the very best of them. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest A.O. Oppenheimer, founder of the unique new website Jewrosity, will explain just what makes a Jewish erotic website the right thing for today. Find out when we return on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
There's nothing like a live radio show to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Too Jewish Radio Show, featuring Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends. It's live at the Fox Theater on March 2nd.
Better than Prairie Home Companion, it's Deli Home Companion. Join me and my great guests, including Richard Lewis, for a live radio variety show to benefit Jewish Family and Children's Services, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and Temple Emmanuel. Saturday night, March 2nd at the Fox.
Tickets at the box office and foxtucsontheater.org, or learn about sponsorship opportunities by calling 327-4501.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli warplanes carried out a strike deep inside Syrian territory last week, targeting a truck convoy carrying sophisticated anti-aircraft weaponry on the outskirts of Damascus that the Israelis believe was intended for the Hezbollah Shiite militia in Lebanon. Israel notified the U.S. about the attack in advance, which the Syrian government, of course, condemned. Israel's move demonstrated its determination to ensure that Hezbollah, its arch foe in the north, is unable to take advantage of the chaos in Syria to bolster its arsenal. The pre-dawn strike was the first time in more than 5 years that Israel's Air Force had attacked a target in Syria. While there was no expectation that the beleaguered Assad government had any interest in retaliating, the strike raised concerns that the Syrian civil war is going to continue to spread beyond its borders. In a statement, the Syrian military denied that a convoy had been struck at all. It said the attack had hit a scientific research facility in a Damascus suburb that was used to improve Syria's defenses, and called the attack a flagrant breach of Syrian sovereignty and airspace. The rebels claimed it was also not Israel, but they who struck some Syrian army target. Israeli officials neither confirmed nor denied the airstrike, no surprise. They never confirmed the destruction of the Syrian nuclear site 5 years ago either. Israel deployed its Iron Dome missile defense system in the north near Haifa, which was heavily bombed during the 2006 war with Hezbollah in Lebanon. Syria and Israel are technically in a state of war, but have long maintained an uneasy peace along their decades-old armistice line. Israel has stayed prominently neutral in Syria's raging civil war, fearful of provoking a wider confrontation with Iran and Hezbollah, which back the brutal Assad regime. No one is sure what would happen if the rebels, who also include some radical Islamist groups, took over. Back in November, after several mortars fell on Israel's side of the border, Israeli tanks did strike a Syrian artillery unit. Argentina's government rejected the Israeli government's summons of its ambassador in order to explain the memorandum of understanding recently signed between Argentina and Iran about the investigation of the 1994 Amiya Jewish Center bombing that killed 85 Jews in Buenos Aires. The attack was suffered by the people of our country and did not involve any Israeli citizens. The victims were mostly Argentines and include 6 Bolivians, 2 Poles, and 1 Chilean, Argentina's foreign ministry said. Argentina has never summoned an Israeli ambassador to demand an explanation over its government's actions. Therefore, the Argentine foreign ministry states that this summons to demand explanations on sovereign decisions of Argentina is improper. We reject it vigorously. It goes against the traditional relations of friendship between the two nations. Last week, Argentina's foreign minister Hector Timmerman, who is Jewish, held a meeting with representatives of the AMIA Buenos Aires Jewish Community Center, the DAIA Jewish Political Umbrella, and representatives and relatives of the AMIA bombing victims in order to explain the details of this agreement between Argentina and Iran. Timmerman said in a news conference that he had informed both DAIA and AMIA that the Commission of Truth will only produce a recommendation to the executive but not to the judiciary, which will work with total independence. However, the agreement was received with harsh criticism by local and global Jewish leaders. The idea of establishing a truth commission on the AMIA tragedy that involves the Iranian regime would be like asking Nazi Germany to help establish the facts of Kristallnacht, said much-respected American Jewish Committee Executive Director David Harris. It is offensive not only to the families of the 85 murdered and hundreds wounded, but to the entire Argentine nation, which for more than 18 years has sought justice. B'nai B'rith International President Alan Jacobs said, "We are surprised that the Argentine government would team up with the Iranian government to seek out justice, given Iran's deplorable judicial track record, its refusal to turn over those previously implicated in the bombings. There's little reason to believe anything substantial will come out of this commission." The parliaments of both countries have to ratify the agreement, which creates a commission of truth consisting of 5 independent judges, none from either Argentina or Iran. Suspects may be interrogated by Argentinian justice officials, but only in Tehran. Argentinian parliamentarians from opposition parties declared they will vote against the agreement with Iran. The pact was signed by the foreign ministers of the two countries on January 27th, just last week, in Ethiopia, on the sidelines of an African Union summit in Addis Ababa. In America, Jewish groups mourned the passing of Max Kampelman, the top U.S. human rights negotiator who straddled the Carter and Reagan presidencies and helped bring about recognition of the plight of Soviet Jews. Kampelman was 92 years old. Born in New York to Jewish immigrants from Romania, Campbellman befriended Hubert Humphrey in the 40s when Humphrey was mayor of Minneapolis, following him to Washington as a staffer when Humphrey was elected to the Senate. He eventually went into private law practice in Washington, and Golda Meir, the Israeli prime minister, was among his clients. In 1980, President Jimmy Carter asked Campbellman to lead talks in Madrid aimed at drawing Soviet bloc nations into the Helsinki Accords signed in 1975, which, among other rights, enshrined the freedom to emigrate. Carter's successor, President Ronald Reagan, was impressed enough by Campbellman's resolve at the talks to ask him to stay on. Campbellman succeeded in extracting an agreement from the Soviet Union by 1983, a gain that was key in advancing the struggle to free Soviet Jewry. Many Soviet Jews are probably not familiar with his name, but Max Campbellman was instrumental in keeping their hopes and dreams alive in his leadership with the Helsinki process, said Mark Levin, the executive director of NCSJ. That was originally known as the National Council on Soviet Jewry. Campbellman advised Walter Mondale in his 1984 bid to unseat Reagan, but was asked back by Reagan in 1985, this time to negotiate nuclear arms reductions. Max Campbellman was a giant of global affairs who transcended partisan politics to advance American interests and make the world safer and more humane, said Robert Satloff, executive director of the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Senator Ben Cardin of Maryland, currently the co-chair of the U.S. Helsinki Commission, the body that monitors implementation of the Accords, mourned the loss of a champion of human rights and democracy. Whether he was working for the release of Soviet refuseniks or imprisoned Solidarity trade unionists in Poland, his calm and understanding demeanor covered a resolve of steel and set principles that never wavered. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, A.O. Oppenheimer. She's the founder, creator, visionary of the Jewish website, Jewrotica.org, which deals with Judaism and sexuality in many of its permutations. I certainly wouldn't say all. Good morning again and welcome back. You have a great section on there, a commentary on the weekly Parsha, and it's called Double Mitzvah. Now, I have been talking about Double Mitzvah with girls since I was a teenager. My wife swears that I just made it up. Can you explain the source of that?
So it's a good question, and I've looked into it as well. It might just be one of these Jewish cultural urban legends, but if you think about it, people are so busy in their day-to-day lives to just relax and embrace sexuality and be with family. And one of the beauties of Shabbat is you put everything else away and you have time to focus on those interpersonal relationships. Though, of course, if we really wanted to find a source-based connection, there's the idea of the Lecha Mishnah, the two pieces of bread, the two chalot that you have on Shabbat. And so there's all of these kind of double metaphors, including the manna, the man that fell when the Jews were wandering in the desert, and a double portion fell on Fridays they would collect, so they didn't have to collect on Saturdays. And so throughout Jewish tradition, there is this tradition of if you have something good, you're going to get it double on Friday. So sex should be no different.
Sexuality is often connected in the Jewish tradition with mystical comments. The Kabbalah, certainly the Zohar, isn't afraid of sex, talks about it a great deal. In putting together Jewrotica, did you, in addition to sort of the more evidence sources, did you find yourself drawn to some of those texts?
So yes, and those will be some of the sources and the pieces that we'll be featuring in the coming months. I've been in touch with Ohad Ezrahi and Nachshon Carmi and many other leaders and rabbis and teachers of spirituality, sexuality, and Kabbalah. So while it's not my background, it's definitely an important area to share with our readers and one that we'll be focusing on soon.
I have a question about Jewrotica. You divide it up, and in fact, there's sort of a button you can get. I think it's PG. There's no G, I think, on Jewrotica, but there's PG, PG-13, maybe there's R, I can't remember, and then like triple X. So how do you determine what goes where?
Sure. So it was really important for me to create a filter system in order to be sensitive to our audience. We draw some hard lines at Jewrotica, so we don't have explicit photographs, nudity, we don't have pornography, but the writing can get pretty racy. And so the filter system allows people of almost any age to come and visit the site and find an experience that's appropriate for them. So content that's PG is generally essays and Torah and maybe sweet or romantic stories that maybe have a kiss at the end, but not much more than that. PG-13, if there's a little bit more sexuality involved, whereas our XXX, XXX is very controversial subjects or perhaps untraditional practices, and the material that's rated R tends to be more of your classic erotic commentary that will have detailed descriptions of sexuality, and we have plenty of content to choose from within each category.
I've been told that tefillin are the most erotic Jewish ritual object. Would you argue with that?
You know, I can't say that I've tried it myself, being raised in a very traditional Jewish environment, but I definitely see the appeal.
Do you have any idea what percentage of your audience, of the users of Jerotica.org, are Orthodox, conservative, secular? Do you have any sense?
So we have a lot of data on what countries, cities, states our readers come from, and we even have data based on polls we've done about the age of viewers. In terms of religious background, I can surmise. I mean, I grew up in a very traditional Orthodox background, and I know that a lot of my community members and a lot of my friends are reading it. This past month, I was in Jerusalem, and I had the opportunity to attend a Melton event and spent a lot of time with rabbis and educators from all backgrounds. And there were a handful of Reform and conservative female rabbis that say they absolutely love the site, but they can't friend us on Facebook because that would just be too much for their congregants. So I think that our readership is pretty wide and pretty diverse, but it's not always apparent who the readers are.
It's been said that for a very long time on the internet, the only successful businesses were doing, for want of a better term, well, it's probably the right term, pornography. Jerotica doesn't really do pornography. Is there a niche here that, you know, it's attractive, it deals with sexuality, but it's not what has sold so much on the web?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something really engaging. Like I was saying, somebody who is very secular or not at all engaged with Jewish content and programming could hear about Jerotica and come and check it out just because the name is wild and there's the edge factor, and then end up learning really fascinating things about their own culture and heritage. And similarly, I think it really broadens the horizons of people who are raised within a more limited background without compromising values. So Jerotica is not, you know, selling out Judaism by saying, oh, come, look, it's sexuality, but it's a sophisticated approach. It's using something that is central to our everyday lives and existence as a tool to elevate. Judaism is all about taking what's around us and sanctifying it. So you have food and you say a bracha, you say a blessing. And so similarly, when it comes to sexuality, it's a question of how do we take this powerful tool that could be the most base thing in the world and the most holy thing in the world, and how do we take it and reconcile it within our tradition and elevate it? And so the purpose of Jerotica is to engage, but also to elevate.
You come out of an Orthodox background, as you said. Have you heard criticism of doing this?
Sure. The response, for the most part, the response to Jerotica has been overwhelmingly positive. We've had coverage in Haaretz and Hiv, El Mundo, even Freakonomics gave us a shout-out. Mm-hmm. Within my own community, the response has been a little bit mixed. And the one critique is essentially that sexuality is supposed to be something private, and by having it in such a public forum, we're undermining kind of the sanctity of it. But I think that there's a fine line, but a huge difference between private and silence. And what we have right now, particularly in the observant Jewish community, is silence. No education, no conversation, no positive role modeling, an edict to maintain the laws of negia, of not touching members of the opposite sex, until you get married. And then you're supposed to all of a sudden flip a switch with perhaps the only practical education that you've received being the challah classes, the preparatory marriage classes. And so we're not, you know, being in your face with nudity, with all of these things, but we do have a platform, and the platform is that conversation about sexuality is important and is positive, and we're creating a forum for it to exist.
One more observation, the Orthodox aspect of this, which it seems to me that the Orthodox approach can't be too blanket, but in general, in the last 20, 30 years, has been really more like Victorian approaches to Tzniut, rather than anything natively Jewish.
Sure, and to the point where I think a lot of the raunchier stories in the Tanakh and in the Talmud would probably be edited out or translated with kind of a more of a vanilla veneer over it in more traditional environments. And I think that's a shame. I think it's a shame, and it's something that we're trying to fix and trying to invite conversation on. And with Jurotica, Jurotica aims to be a pluralistic initiative, a pluralistic organization. We're actually going to be launching some really exciting workshops later this spring that I'd be happy to tell you about. But rather than Jurotica having a very specific mission about, well, how much sexuality should be discussed, how much of a say Judaism should have in our lives, we just provide the platform for the conversation. And we're evolving, you know, work in progress. So we invite people, if they have strong opinions, either way, to get involved, because Jurotica is, in a sense, a project of the people. And the submissions that we publish are the submissions that we get in, the comments and opinions that we get in. So we try to put forth as wide a range of opinions as possible.
What do you say to those people who say that, Judaism and erotic, what's erotic about being Jewish, who see it as almost a contrast in terms?
I mean, there's a tremendous amount that's erotic about being Jewish. I think for me, one of the many spurs toward creating Jurotica was just that the New York Times this past summer in June 2012, they put forth an article citing that 50 Shades of Grey first became widely popular in the observant Jewish community in New York. And I thought, if people are reading this level of erotica based in another culture, then Judaism has such a unique and rich cultural vocabulary and history. And what about creating quality literature and fiction and works that are set in our own rituals, in our own heritage? And even when you, so to take an example from the background that I come from, if you imagine the amount of sexual tension that exists in a community where people are observing Hilchot Negiah, where men and women aren't touching, it creates even something like locking eyes or walking side by side. It brings it to this whole other level. There's so many different levels of cultural understanding that are inherently erotic and sexual within the Jewish tradition.
And without emphasizing the Orthodox part, I have to say, I think 50 Shades of Grey became popular in the Orthodox community because a guy was always wearing a suit and a white shirt. But
you might be right. one of my confessions is that I do own a copy of 50 Shades of Grey, as it was gifted to me, but I haven't read it yet. Some people love it and some people hate it, but there's just been so much pushback, and I've been so swamped working on Jurotica and building out our new workshop, getting ready for our kickoff tour, that to sit back and read a novel, I don't know who has time for that. I certainly don't.
It's a fascinating website, jurotica.org. You really don't know any more than that, and if you search for it, you will not find hundreds of Jurotica websites. I want to thank A.O. Oppenheimer for a great visit here on Too Jewish, and again, so it's jewrotica.org.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Cohen. Take care.
Thanks so much. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out here on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Israeli Consul General David Siegel. Our playout this morning comes from a local Tucson band, the group Boreas, which is coming out with a new CD of Jewish music, a whole Shabbat evening service. This will be the world premiere of their version of Shalom Rav. Great piece. I think you'll really like it. My friends, enjoy your Super Bowl Sunday. May you be blessed with a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Shalom Rav Yisrael, Amcha Tasim Leolam. 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 Ki Ata Hu Melech Adon, Lechov HaShalom. Ki Ata Shalom.